broadcasting house here in Accra. My name is George Asikri with this edition of Behind the News, where we bring you latest updates and detailed analysis of current happenings in Ghana. Tonight, Auditor General signals his determination to prosecute public officials cited to have misappropriated public funds. How tough will this task be? We hear from him shortly. GJA settles its election disputes and prepares for election. What went into this and how ready are the parties involved? Details shortly. Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you all these stories on our show tonight. You are encouraged, as usual, to be an active listener by joining the discussion via our text line 0266-026-941. Auditor General has, in line with the Supreme Court ruling in June this year, surcharged some public officials cited to have misappropriated state funds in the Auditor General's report. The Auditor General, Daniel Yao Domelevo, has hinted that many more people will be surcharged and warned that his outfit is non-political and will deal with cases based on their merit and on the national interest. Conscious of possible legal tussle, Mr. Domelevo said everything is being done to build solid cases for such prosecutions. Behind the News asks if this is the beginning of an end to make corruption and misappropriation of public funds unattractive. Joining us on the line is the Auditor General himself, Daniel Yao Domelevo. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening. How are you?
Very well, and thanks for your time. First, what steps are involved in these decisions that you've taken so far to get people cited in the Auditor General's report prosecuted?
Okay, first and foremost, if you refer to the Constitution, Clause 7B of Article 187, it says that in the discharge of his functions, the Auditor General may allow expenditures and surcharge. So the first thing is that we must do an audit. It is the course of our function as auditors. If we detect any expenditure which is contrary to law, or any losses that have been incurred due to somebody's negligence, then we are supported by the Constitution to disallow and surcharge the person. Before we surcharge the person, however, as you rightly said, we try to build evidence. We need to assemble all the supporting documents and evidence that we will use to establish the guilt or to prove our case when the person goes to court. Because the same Constitution mandates anybody who is aggrieved to appeal to the High Court. And Constitutional Instrument 102 gives us only 14 days to produce our evidence before court if somebody should appeal against our decision. So what we are doing is that we are painstakingly going through the process to produce all the evidence that we need to support this case, and then we go ahead and do the surcharge or the disallowance.
From afar, any time we hear of Auditor General's report, the impression is that the individuals cited are either corrupt or people who do not have the nation at heart. Am I getting the impression from what you said that it is not necessarily that they steal the money, but if they use the money not in line with the laws of the land?
You are right. When the Auditor General is reported, not capture only abuses of money or misappropriation of money. In a layman's language, embezzlement. We don't only capture that. The things that we report include any laid down procedure that was, at the end of the day, it may not occasion any loss. There may not be any theft. There may not be misappropriation. But some procedure, referred to in financial management terms, the internal control, have not been, and that is also reported. If I can cite an example for to make it clearer to listeners. If, for instance, a computer is bought by an institution and the computer arrives, the internal control procedure is usually to receive the source, document it as goods received. Then it is issued to the department. So there's documentary evidence of the arrival of the computer, and then there's evidence of it being given to a user. But if this process is not followed, the person or the department could follow the procurement process and buy the thing at a good price in line with the law. But we will still report that there's an internal control mechanism which is lost because the paper trail, which is required by the policies of public financial management, have not been followed. It's not all the cases that involve misuse of funds or, as you like to call it, embezzlement of funds. Some of the cases are based lack of following administrative or internal control measures.
Okay.
And we report all of that.
But, sir, our bureaucratic arrangement makes it clear for these things to be followed. What could possibly be the reason behind people who do not follow these things? It appears it's systematic. Every year, Auditor General's report, we hear of these cases.
That is exactly our reason for those instructions. Because if you don't follow that bureaucratic process, if you don't get the items received properly in source and issued, it can happen that the system is missing, and you don't know at what point it got missing, who to be held responsible. Because there may be no record to show who exactly took the computer. But if it was the proper procedure, then there will be an audit trail to show that those computers really delivered to source. And there will be another documentation to show that Mr. A or B signed for the computer. Therefore, we can say the computer is in the custody of Mr. A or B, where it got lost. So we can hold a particular person accountable. That is why even if the computer is still there, if the item is still there, but follow the position of it, did not follow the procedure, we still complain about it. Example is also about asset register. For instance, you go to some of the offices and the assets are not marked. Therefore, a vehicle belonging to government can easily be taken by an individual. Or a table belonging to government can easily be taken away by an individual. So these are some things we report. So you may report some of this not because the laws has occurred, because the infraction, if it continues, creates room for losses to be occur in the future, and therefore we draw attention to it.
There is an internal audit agency and the internal your department. What is the relationship between the two?
The internal audit, as the name goes, is internal to the organization. Both private sector and public sector, in financial management, you have two types of auditors. The management puts in place an audit unit which reports to management to ensure on daily basis or on continuous basis that the control mechanisms in the organization are intact, they are being complied with, and nothing is going wrong. So if we can put it this way, internal audit is the eye and the ear of management. They are normally employees and staff of the organization, and they report to the management of the organization.
So if in the Auditor General's report, an organization is found culpable, what happens to the internal auditor since they would have gone through the process?
Can I think between internal audit and the external auditor? The external auditors, however, as the name implies, are external. They are outside the organization being audited. So they come in periodically to review all the processes, including the findings of the internal auditor. Sometimes we depend upon the findings of the internal auditor, especially when they are competent and independent. When we think their competency is a question mark or their independence is a question mark, nothing stops us to do a complete review of the system by ourselves.
Okay.
Now, the fact that we find an instruction and it is not captured in the internal auditor's report means that maybe the internal auditor is not very effective. But it does not necessarily mean that that internal auditor is culpable. Because both internal audit as well as external audit the two are done through sampling. We don't pick all the transactions. Normally, we do risk profiling. We look at the risky areas, and we zoom into those areas, and then we only sample the other areas. There's no way you can go to an institution as big as yours and go through all the risks. You remain there forever. So you normally have to sample some of them. So the fact that an internal auditor does not discover it does not make him necessarily culpable. But sometimes there could be a situation where he or she discovered it and did not report, but that must be established. But it does not necessarily follow.
What will you say to those who will accuse your organization and your work as being responsible for stifling initiative in organization? Because a leader is supposed to take bold decisions. Some may be right, some may be wrong. You can't tell. And so we have people who take over and they merely act as managers, following laid down procedures.
Yes, every leader is supposed to take bold decisions and pick. But you must do that within the ambit of the law, not outside the law. You can only do that with that respect for the law, if you're using your personal money. But when you're using public funds, and the public funds have got laid down rules, you must necessarily comply with it.
Right.
It's not your money. It is the money of the people and who makes the rules. It's just like you sending a messenger. And if when you go do this, you come back and I took initiative, I did something else. If you don't like it, what happens to that messenger? That's the point.
Right. Sir, you addressed journalists today and you said some people have been surcharged. How many are involved?
So far we are at 11.
11?
Yes.
And why did you refuse to disclose these people?
I don't have to. Refer to the Constitution. Safety within public sector is law. If you refer to Clause 7A of the Constitution, of Article 187 of the Constitution, it says that in the discharge or the performance of the duties of the Auditor General is not under the direction and control of anybody or institution.
So when you say they have been surcharged, what does it mean?
Okay.
When you say they have been surcharged, what does that mean?
Okay, let me explain. What we mean to say is that the amount that we found to have been unlawfully used is being collected from them together with interest. So let's take it that you are the head teacher or the head of a government institution and people left your institution as a result of resignation or dismissal or whatever. For several months, their names are still on your payroll. When we get that, we are going to compute all the salaries that have been paid to them and collect that money from you together with the interest, because the financial administration regulation 298 requires that the next day after which a staff of yours separates from government, you are supposed to write to the banker of that staff to inform them that that person is no more a government employee. So any salary that comes to the credit of that person should be sent back into the government. So if you don't do that, as a result of which government keeps losing money, we are going to collect that money from you. So the third charge is we are collecting the money lost plus interest from you. And we assume that you have borrowed government money and so we use the Bank of Ghana lending rate.
So what now that they've been surcharged, what stage is the AG coming in?
Who is the AG?
The Attorney General.
The Attorney General? Okay.
Yes.
So there are a few things here. If you even look at the Supreme Court decision, any infraction as far as funds are concerned will have a civil procedure, which is what we are using to collect the money. If it is found to be fraudulent or it is theft, then that also is a criminal offense. That is where the Attorney General comes in.
Oh, okay.
If, for instance, your negligence occasioned a loss, we can collect the money from you. That is the end. But if it is a deliberate act to deny the state the money and we collect it from you, Attorney General may also visit you, committing none of them.
And you here, if I'm acting in the name of GBC, I am acting in the name of the corporation. So are you talking of charging me as the institution or me as the individual?
When you read the constitution, it says the one who incurs the expenditure, not the institution, the one who incurs the expenditure or the person who authorizes. And the Supreme Court did very good job by explaining that concept. It even said that it may be a public servant or private person who contributed to the law. So it is a person. We are not talking about dignity. We are talking about you as a person.
But we have observed over the years that the people who appear before the committees are usually not the direct people involved in committing the crime. They would have either been transferred, they've gone on retirement, or so on and so forth.
Yes, that has been the trend in the past. That has been, henceforth, because the courts have made it very clear that we should go for the individual. That's what the constitution.
Okay.
We should not ask Ghana Education Service to refund money or the secondary school to refund money. The head teacher or the accountant whose actions or inactions or misbehavior or negligence occasioned the loss to the state. The Constitution and the Supreme Court is saying that we go after that person.
Right.
So the certificates that we have not issued certificate to any institution. We are issuing certificate to individual. We name the person, you, so and so, the accountant of this school. You are being searched. That's what we are doing.
All right. How ready are you for the political game here? If it is NDC, MPP will cite you. If it is MPP, NDC will cite you.
Well, what we are doing is implementing what the Constitution says we should do. We are not looking at parties. The game we are playing is not a political game. We are just discharging our constitutional mandate as clearly explained by the Supreme Court.
All right.
So, our work has no political undertone.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on Behind the News tonight. We are very grateful, sir, and wish you all the best.
Thank you. I wish you the best.
Daniel Yao Domelevo is the Auditor General of the Republic of Ghana. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is a member of Occupy Ghana, J.J. Kweku Segbefia. Occupy Ghana actually led the process that has led to the Supreme Court ruling and the decision we getting from the Auditor General. JJ, good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening and thank you very much for having me.
How does it feel when your action today is making some people unable to sleep in comfort?
Well, comfort is relative, but first off, we are happy. We are happy to the extent that we know that our voice matters. Our voice has been heard. And we also know, I mean, as we see the effects of the Supreme Court ruling, we suddenly have faith in the idea that citizens of this country, whoever they are, wherever they are, if they take it upon themselves to see the right done in this country, they will be successful, however long it takes. So yes, it makes us very happy. And even much more important than that, we are pleased to know that the processes of getting back our money that we have lost through means that we should not have lost will be returning to the chest. And this makes us very, very happy.
Beyond what you have done, the legal aspect, is there any other role that you can play in the real battle?
So what we are looking now that the Auditor General has issued his first series of surcharges. And we know that, I mean, even in spite of the fact that these surcharges have been released, the individuals, surcharge have, you know, their rights, the surcharges do not impugn upon their rights to seek legal redresses whatsoever. And so we are prepared if the powers of the Auditor General are challenged by these individuals, we are prepared to stand by him or to stand by the ruling of the Supreme Court and ask for perhaps, consequential orders if people raise objections to what the Auditor General is doing, if people sue him, if people believe that maybe their liberties are being infringed upon by the issuance of these surcharges. I mean, people will resort to all kinds of things in order to avoid doing what is right. And we are more than willing and able to make sure that there's, you know, nobody escapes the very long arm of the law in the exercise of this organization's powers.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time. I'm sure you are proud you are a citizen and not a spectator.
Absolutely, yes.
JJ Kweku Segwefia is a member of Occupy Ghana. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. We also have on the line an anti-corruption crusader, Mary Awelana Ada, and she's with the Ghana Integrity Initiative. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening, George. Good evening to your cherished listeners.
It's been part of you over the years to speak against corruption and call for measures to fight the canker. Can we say that we are at the beginning of an end to get what we need in this battle?
It's a yes and it's also a no.
Hello, your line is not too clear. Can you please reposition yourself?
Hello, can you hear me now?
A little better, if you can still.
Yes, I'm saying it's a yes and it's no. It has happened because we don't know what's ahead of us. But then if yes, because
the line is still bad.
Wow. Let me step out and see what's happened.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is it fine now?
Yes.
Great. So I'm saying it's a yes because all along we have advocated for stronger institutions who are independent and can do their job without fear of any reprisal and without also any interference from political office holders. And so in that regard, it is a good thing that the Auditor General is beginning this process. And we see more of such going forward because we continue to hear the president echoing the fact that he is interested in the fight against corruption. And so this is the time where we are also calling on other independent institutions who have a similar mandate to also begin to show such commitment. It's just the move forward. And as the gentleman who spoke before me indicated, we as civil society, we as movements, should support the Auditor General with everything we can pull up, with our citizens behind us, and also with those who have the legal mandates and also the legal competencies to support, because it is going to be a challenging days ahead. I have been in another dispensation where officials who have been surcharged have taken these issues up to court, and they have run for several years. And so we should prepare. We should prepare to support the Auditor General to take this process forward.
Somebody will say that per what is happening, a lot of leaders in state organizations will simply be spectators. They will not take major decisions. And so they will just follow the normal thing, and that will not lead to growth in most of the organizations.
That couldn't be true, and it cannot be true. If that were true, then the nations which have developed over time, the nations which have been able to strengthen their institutions, whose institutions are acting independently and taking crucial decisions, wouldn't have developed. And so it is a clarion call for us to be diligent in public office. This is public service. And so whoever is put in a place of power by the people of Ghana should be conscious in implementing their mandate and be aware that every decision they take has repercussions for the future. And so it's rather going to promote accountability, it's going to enhance transparency, and it's going to open up the system for the people to participate. As we have signed on to various conventions to promote participation of citizens, this is rather going to help public office holders, political leaders, to open up the system for people to know what is happening so they don't take decisions in secret, they don't cloud their decisions in secrecy, and then they come back to say there were misappropriations They did not steal money. These are jargons. And so for now, I believe that the terminology of accountability, transparency, the terminology of integrity are going to be put into practice, just like other nations who are performing very well when it comes to governance and public service are accomplishing.
Individuals are being held responsible here, and we do know that in public organizations, decisions are not taken unilaterally by individuals, even though in some cases it might happen. Sometimes even the board is involved. To what extent will it be fair to be punishing one individual for a decision that should be in the interest of the organization, coming from all the sectors, middle class, the lower class, and the upper class within?
Exactly. And so, George, definitely, if you go to every institution, we have a spending officer. And then we have various categories of people who can spend. So if the buck stops with somebody, definitely the buck will stop with some of those people. And I am not too clear on exactly the 11 people who are being searched as now, because the Auditor General did not mention names. So we do not know if they are directors, we do not know if there were people who were cited, particularly in any of the audit reports. We don't know which ones as well. But if you have taken time to look through the audit reports, there are instances where individuals take decisions unilaterally in public institutions, and these decisions affect the institutions. And so, even though we have collective responsibility, these individuals take the decisions which cost the nation, and for that matter, they should be sanctioned. And when it comes to the level of the organization, I am very aware as well that those who are in charge of spending also get to get some punishment. But as we cannot mention exactly who is being searched, we cannot state that if it is individuals or it should be collective for that matter.
Right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful, madam.
Thank you so much, George. Have a good evening.
Mary Awelana Ada is an anti-corruption crusader of the Ghana Integrity Initiative. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Keep your messages coming on 0266-026-941. 0266-026-941. To our next story. The Elections Committee of the Ghana Journalists Association will meet next week Tuesday to deliberate on the next date for the association's election of national and regional executives to run its affairs for 3 years. The meeting follows an amicable resolution of all the legal challenges that rocked the election originally scheduled for March 31 this year. The terms of settlement include inter-candidate elections committee made up of the candidates vetted and passed by the elections committee, as well as those approved by the elections dispute adjudication committee, is to be set up to organize the election. All candidates are to be given certified copies of the roll of voters, as well as commit to ensure trust and fairness. Tonight, we find out the next line of action of the leading candidates and those whose effort led to the resolution of the legal tussle. Joining us on the line is the president of the Ghana Journalists Association, GJA, Roland Afel Money. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, King George.
And thanks for your time. Can you please explain to us this new body called Inter-Candidate Elections Committee?
Basically, there's nothing new about this committee. Maybe the acronym gives the impression that it's something new. Elections cannot be conducted without the central participant, that's the candidate. And we also need a body articulated by a constitution to supervise elections. So the election committee is bringing together the candidates to constitute the inter-candidate election committee who agree on the steps to be taken to arrive at the desired destination. That's the election of first candidate for the GJA.
And does this committee include people who are contesting at the regional level?
No, because of the geographical distance. But in the IT world, I believe it's possible to communicate effectively with them and also get their views on what we decide upon in Accra. So, but I believe once the national executive, citizens are arrived at by all the candidates contested at national level, I believe those at the regional level will fall in line.
We heard earlier of the GGA's election committee. Does it mean that that committee will be subordinated to the inter-candidate elections committee?
I'm disinclined to believe that. I think the election committee is what is captured by constitution, what is constitutionally, their body constitutionally mandated to conduct the election. They're just grouping in the candidate to aid communication, because one of the issues which were raised by the plaintiffs was that the communication flow was not forthcoming. So in order to close that gap, the candidates and the electoral committee have been asked to come together to decide together. Because this is in line with basic principles that what consensus should be decided by all. So once they all decide on the next steps, I believe they'll be inclined to go with what has been decided by them collectively.
And what will be that next step?
I'm out of Accra, but reports written indicate that they will meet tomorrow to decide on the next step. There was an initial meeting yesterday. Again, I was. So that the atmosphere was cordial, and the new page has been opened in the relationship between the election committee and the candidate. So I believe tomorrow will also replicate that mood, and this will be the roadmap for us to follow as far as the election is concerned.
You are the president, the sitting president, and so if candidates are meeting to iron things out and you will not be there tomorrow, what does that tell us?
George, you recall that in the national election, previous national election, and past national election and previous ones, the leading candidates did not necessarily put in any appearance at APAC meetings. We do recall that most of the meetings, the party reps represented them, especially when we were going to pick forms, nominating forms, they were represented by party reps. So the same thing, I believe, the important thing is to arrive at amicable settlement of the issue, and in which I played a central role, and I believe the rest are just formalities. Facing the dates and agree on electoral rule and all that. They are just formalities which doesn't necessarily mean that I should be there for the whole process to be concretized.
So what happens to the elections, the campaign that you began earlier?
The court case halted effectively the campaign. It changed the complexion of the whole election. Because the court placed an injunction on the election, so as a law-abiding citizen, there's no way I will campaign. So everything came to a halt by the court decision, and now that that roadblock has been removed, I believe campaigning will start. And I'll resume and leading to the election. So I believe we are on course. There's every likelihood that all the candidates will cooperate with the election committee, and we will have our pledge to consign to the dustbin what happened, and pledge to salvage what is left of our image, and to ensure that never again we will subject ourselves to the litigation and the denting of our image by the court action.
But the resolution that you have just secured from the arbitration, did it include measures for unity after the election?
Entirely, yes, because once we all decided to come together, we did sign agreements that will allow the election committee to do its work, contrary to initial position by the plaintiffs. Initially, they didn't want the election committee to continue the process, but eventually they agreed, and so the wobbly confidence in the election committee has been restored, and I believe the confidence will not diminish, but if anything, it will intensify as we head towards the election.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show and wish you all the best.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you.
Roland Afelmoni is the president of the Ghana Journalists Association. We also have on the line Lloyd Evans. He is a presidential aspirant. Good evening, sir, and welcome to the program.
Good evening.
You first took this issue to court. Why did you agree to go for an ADR?
Why did I
agree to go for ADR?
Yeah, it was a suggestion of the judge. And at the first instance, he was asking whether we do not have elders to arbitrate on this issue. So he gave us some time. We came back again, and the same thing happened. And at the third time, the lawyers for Alfred Money or the executives said, Mr. Austin Garman has come in to arbitrate. And so I said, well, fine. The court wasn't a decision that I loved to, to go, but I was forced beyond, circumstances. And if finally we've had someone to arbitrate, fine, let's go for it. So I decided to go for it.
So has the arbitration resolved the issues that you were passionate about?
Oh, yes. It has. Because the election committee refused to talk to us. We wrote them a series of letters. They refused to answer. And we saw that what they were doing for the path that they were treading was not conducive to us. And we don't have any other alternative again than to go to a superior court to force them to talk to us. So we started talking to us, and I think that is the spirit that we were looking for.
Have you met as candidates after the ADR?
Yes. According to the arbitration, we must meet on 1st of August, and we did.
How was the atmosphere like?
Oh, it was very cordial, lovely, frank, everybody was down to earth, and nothing seriously happened anyway.
What's going to be the next line of action?
Well, the election committee is meeting sometime this week or so to come up with a date or a timetable, and then we'll look at it. If it's not convenient to us, they will review it. If it's okay, we move ahead.
If any aggrieved member decides to thwart this effort, what will then be the collective decision?
Well, we'll listen to that person. That person too has a right. I mean, we cannot stop anybody from exercising his or her right. When our rights were being trampled upon, we went to court. So if an aggrieved member comes in and he says A, B, or C, well, as a team or as candidate, we will listen to him or her and then see what the issues are. If it can be resolved, resolve it.
What will you say to those who argue that what has happened has marred the image of the GJA?
Well, it's unfortunate. You see, if you want to have things smooth all the time, you might not have it. Obviously, there might be hurdles. And when you are able to clear the hurdles, you know, it will serve as a learning point, you know, to you. So probably these are some of the issues that we've learned, that we should learn to talk to each other in, you know, in cases like this. One shouldn't arrogate to him or herself, you know, every power. We all have rights. So if there's an issue, we have to talk, you know, over the issue and see how best we can find solution to those, you know, issues. But if one party feels that he has a right to do everything, you know, nobody can tell him or her what to do or what not to do, you know, it creates challenges. And as I said, you know, it hasn't marred the image of the association, but it has rather cleared the way for better relationship, better work, you know, and that has also enforced our democracy, internal democracy.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time and wish you all the best.
Thank you, my brother.
Lloyd Evans is a presidential aspirant of the GGA. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. There are three candidates contesting the association's presidential seat. Lloyd Evans, the incumbent Roland Afelmoni, and Mr. Johnny Ayiti. But these are the two candidates who had the issues in court, and so that is why we chose to talk to them. We have on the line an ADR expert and labor consultant, Austin Game. Good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening, my brother.
Sir, what were the processes that you adopted that we had a smooth resolution to this thing that we've been hearing all along?
Thank you so much. Well, by the grace of God, we try to approach the process professionally, allowing God, of course, to guide us by His wisdom. And by His grace, we were able to achieve it. It was a surprise to them. I do know it should, because it took just about 45 minutes to come to conclusion during the main or the actual mediation. The way we started was that because the court ordered that by Monday 31st, they should return to the court with possible results. We did a pre-meeting with them separately to guide them as to how the process will evolve. You know, if you are conducting mediation and you don't have the capability, you are likely to just muddy the waters. But if you have the capability, you have to do a pre-meeting, not a pre-trial, because that would not connote a language for mediation, but a pre-meeting to guide them as to how you prepare them, as to how to uncover the process, as to how they learn about the importance of what was worrying them, and then they themselves will search for a solution that will satisfy them, and we transfer it into an agreement that can be implementable. I think we went through that process on Thursday with them separately. Within 90 minutes for each, we were able to finish. But when it came to the main mediation on Friday, we reminded them of what we discussed using the principles that will guide them to speak gently to one another and be honest, open, specific to the issues, and talk, because no talking, there'll be no solution. At the end of the day, they were pleasantly helpful. Their lawyers were very, very helpful. And by God's grace, within 45 minutes, like I said, we reached the zenith of it, and everybody was jubilating. And I was very happy, and I thank God for them.
I'm just wondering, what is it about alternative dispute resolution that will make it easy for people to have an issue resolved more than it would have done if they used the law court?
Well, traditionally, the courts are very helpful, especially in matters of illegal, you know, activities such as rape, such as corruption, such as in a first-degree felony type of case. Serious psych-light cases are perhaps very, very good for the court. Such civil cases like this one, let's say marital cases, let's say a matter between you and a person, interdependency conflict, are not necessarily very good. That is why we call it appropriate dispute resolution. Because if you say alternative to a rapist, I don't think I'll support it. He deserves to go to the court to be properly examined, and if there is any help, he can give fine. If there is any treatment, if there is any punishment, they met it out, so people will learn from it. But when it comes to a case like the type of the GJA type of case, like workplace, like marital case, like just minor cases like that, as far as I'm concerned, if you have an experienced mediator who knows especially about the pause process, that is people being taught to learn how to use language skills effectively, you should be able to resolve any manner of conflict. Of course, we are called labor consultants, but we resolve very, very tricky issues, 10 years, 15 years marital cases within hours. And so I think that this GJA case, we do know that when they come, by the grace of God, we should, with the kind of practice behind us, to be able to assist them to have a good conversation, not argument, not debate. Anytime they want to engage in argument or debate, we bring them back to line, because we inform them about the use of a ghost principle, and they do know that they have to operate as a gentle people, as honest people, specific. So if they're going off course, you bring them back, because we are trained and we know as masters how to go about this. And so we were, by God's grace, their lawyers were very, very, very helpful. They themselves were very, the gentlemen you spoke to were very, very helpful. They were very cooperative because they were sitting before a mediator or mediators who understand the process. So it wasn't difficult for them. Now, the other thing which is very important is the impartiality of the mediator is very crucial. That means you are not going to take sides with anybody under any circumstance. And you use neutral language, because no personality can be neutral. You can be as much as possible impartial using neutral language. That's why we believe in the use of the pause. And once you use that, by the time you get to the end of the five-stage process, within 90 minutes, you should be able to resolve however difficult, complex the problem might be. But in this case, we use 45 minutes for the actual mediation.
Sir, what then constitutes a resolution in ADR practice? People will come with entrenched positions. The processes are involved. Which one constitutes the final judgment?
Well, it may not. By the ethics of our profession, we don't even use a language called judgment. What will constitute a solution that will satisfy or mutually beneficial to the parties is when you guide them through, especially once they finish uncovering what they are here to resolve, and they name it, and you put it down for them, they look at it, and that becomes a partial guide for them now to learn the importance of the reason why they were there. They talk to themselves, because you, the mediator, have no part in the conflict, and therefore you only assist them in the conversation, not debate, not argument. So you are always there, if they are veering off, to bring them back to the point of departure. And then they engage in that conversation or dialogue, if you want to call it so. And once they go through the learn process, which is normally the emotional stage of the conversation, about 20, 25 minutes thereabout, that would have been almost the end of the solution. If you are a proper, excuse my language, a proper mediator, you will then understand how they are feeling. You paraphrase what they have said long while ago and give it back to they themselves to accept that this is indeed their concern. That becomes a criteria based on which they will brainstorm the next stage, which is, what if we do this or we do that, and search for a common solution that will satisfy that which is the missing link in their lives all this while. And at the end of the day, they will be able to find a solution at the last stage, which is, so where do we go from here? Who will do this? When will they do it? For instance, they said they will be having a meeting. Yes, as part of the specific terms of the agreement, they came to conclusion that they were going to meet a certain day. Who will convene the meeting? We agree on the chairman of the election committee who will convene it. What time? We agreed on 12 o'clock. the venue, DKA center, where, and so forth and so on. They agreed, they themselves came out with the solution.
Okay.
The mediator then serves as a scribe to them. We put the team together. If it's a court-directed mediation, like in this case, you write these things, they sign, I sign as a witness, as a mediator for them, and we submit it to the court for the court to adopt as a consent judgment.
Right.
Therefore, it's in tandem with the ADR Act of Ghana.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show, and I wish you all the best.
Most grateful.
Austin Gama is an ADR expert and labor consultant. We also have on the line the executive director, Media Foundation for West Africa, Sulemana Brahima. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening and thank you for having me.
Thanks for your time as well. So what do you make of the resolution of the GJA election dispute?
Well, I think it's a very welcoming development because we were particularly worried about what was going on. If you recall, and I believe listeners may recall, when the election date was first announced, we decided to, you know, complement the efforts of the GJA to make this particular election, to increase the profile of it, and at the end of the day, whoever would be elected as GJA executives, supporting them in their mandate to ensure that the GJA is strengthened and members then have a way of connecting more strongly with the association. But unfortunately, we had these developments coming up. And I think that it was very unfortunate, particularly because it's about the Journalists Association, the mother union of journalists in this country. And I believe that it's worrying because people look up to the media, people look up to journalists when it comes to political disputes, you know, particularly the MPP, NDC, constituency issues, regional issues, national issues. So for it to come to the media ourselves, and then we begin to fight each other, going to court, you know, petitions, and so on and so forth. It was something that was really, really worrying. So the news about the resolution is a very welcoming development, I must say.
Is the Media Foundation for West Africa still going to organize the debate for the candidates as planned earlier?
I think it was a critical intervention we tried to put in. And fortunately, at that time, the Elections Committee thought that the support was something that would help in terms of the management of the elections and the profile of the elections. If the committee still thinks that it is something that would help in terms of increasing the profile of the elections, we are open to discussing that. Because, as I did say, for us as Media Foundation for West Africa, our interest, of course, across West Africa, is how to strengthen these unions and associations who complement the efforts that we make in promoting the rights of journalists, in promoting media development, and ensuring that journalists work within an environment that is safe at all times. So if the committee still feels it necessary that it will be useful to have that debate, the Media Foundation for West Africa will still be open to supporting it.
What will you tell journalists all and the parties involved?
Well, I think that people are looking up to us as practitioners and, as they say, members of the fourth estate of the realm. And for that matter, people would expect that when it comes to matters of elections, transparency, accountability, fairness, and all of that are things that must be seen to be adhered to by all. Of course, I believe the GJA as it is now, the other day we were even having a conversation whether there are even executives of the GJA. Somebody was saying, well, their tenure has been over and therefore we cannot continue to hold them as, you know, the substantive executives of the GJA. I think this resolution must pave the way for us to be able to have the elections sorted out, and journalists must remain committed to the association, because I believe when developments like this happen, it further weakens the loyalty of members And I think that is not something that will help. I would appeal to journalists to still remain very loyal, very committed to the GJA. It's an important association, and all of us must do what we can to make it stronger, okay, rather than anything that will make it weak.
Thank you very much for your time. Very grateful, sir.
Thank you very much.
Suleiman Abrahima is Executive Director of the Media Foundation for West Africa. Some of your text messages. Akunle in Roman Reach says, George, we are tired of the corrupt politicians. They will never fulfill their promises to the ordinary citizens of the country. Please, we want jobs, and we are tired of these politicians. They are only there to amass wealth for themselves. Good evening to you, George, and your crew, and thanks for the good job you're doing. Behind the News is simply unique. Monica Kons in Navungu. Razak Bulung in Kumbungu District says, anybody who spends Ghana's money free will be forced to pay it back under President Akufo-Addo's government. May the good Lord grant President Akufo-Addo the wisdom to deliver. AU Farouk in Tamale says, the Auditor General must not be selective in naming and shaming those who defrauded the state. George, I salute you and your team. Thank you for your good work. But please, I want the Auditor Generals to give us the names of culprits who will fall foul of the law, because some citizens would like to know these people are citizens of this country. Okra in Asankrigwa, Amenfi, sent in that. Zibo in Wenchi says, government should punish these corrupt officials. Yindong Simon in Tongo says, the NPP should convert their fake policies into real ones and stop deceiving us all the time. Salam Kasalagu says, the steps taken by the Auditor General to curtail corruption in Ghana is good, and we need to sanitize our citizens. This government has failed. Change is coming in 2020. Atankama in Boko sent in this one. Mustafa in Tamale. Good evening, George. If any former official is found guilty of mismanaging and misappropriation of Ghana's funds, he or she should be prosecuted and made to pay it back into the state coffers. May Allah grant Nanado the wisdom to deliver. George, I support the idea of the Auditor General to prosecute corrupt officials. Whoever spends state money illegally must be dealt with. Daudu Adi in Tamale sent in that one. Abdullah in Santani Tonlon District. So I think the Auditor General has hit the nail right on the head. Anyone who spends state money wrongfully must be made to face the full rigors of the law. May Allah grant the president wisdom to deliver. George, thank you for your good work for our nation. Antipas in Kete Krachi sent in that one. Kaposhi in Busunu. Ghana as a nation and each and every individual living in this country must know exactly what is happening. Abdul Karim Wenchi Zongo says, I think the Auditor General should be commended and given the needed support to work and retrieve all stolen money by the public officials. Lamti King Rashid in Wenchi also says, these public officials must be jailed to end corruption. And this is all we have for tonight's edition of Behind the News. My producers have been Asibi Bangu Ikela, Set Eya, John Pobi, Belland Elam Tete, Suel Nanama Ajikum, and Philip Boateng. Hannah Owusu Bempa was our sound engineer. I am George Asikri. Good night.